Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 91 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jim O'Kane, producer of 5+ Movies by Minute group projects, including Die Hard Minute. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Go figure. I mean, it's so popular, we're doing it twice, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, I love the show that you did, but I like the consistency of, you know, having the same host do it. You know? Sure. And so it gives a different twist to the whole thing, which is good.
Yeah, I know. There's lots of different takes. It kind of gives you a Rashomon idea of how things go, and everybody's got a different take, even on the same minutes. It's always fascinating.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, there's even someone who's comparing them every week, you know. You know, we have Bubba Week doing that. Every week he gives everybody his review as to which of the two he thinks is better. You know, the pluses and minuses of each of them.
We've gone so meta that we're doing reviews of reviews.
That's right. Why not? Yeah. You know, pretty soon people are going to do, second by second movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Has anyone done anything less than a minute? Do you know?
I don't think so. I mean, I know people that are doing it like 2 minute, like, for example, Ethan McKinley was doing 2 minute Terminator for 2 minutes at a time.
Right. But there were chapters, there's scenes.
Yeah.
The one that I can think of is when Bubba did Groundhog Day. So
yeah,
the way that he split up his episodes were for each of the days that we get to see. So there are days where it's just a slap.
Right, yeah, and some of the Movies by Minutes ladies that are doing American Graffiti song by song every time there's a new song break.
Tierney and Rachel, right?
Yes, and Doris.
And Doris.
So yeah, so there, yeah, it's, you know, it, there's many ways to cut the pie, and it's interesting to hear some of the varied ways of doing it. But yeah, I can't imagine what a 30-second at a time or second by second would do.
You have to have a very good movie to be able to do it second by second.
Yeah, you know, or a very short one.
No, but it also needs to be something very rich that there's so much to talk about. You know, maybe when Alex and Pete finish, you know, their run, when they finish the final Star Wars movie, maybe they'll then take one of them and do it, shorter versions of it to see how deep they can go into that.
Wow. Well, something to look forward to in the near future.
That's good. Yeah, of course. Always. There's always something to look forward to. All right. So minute 91 begins with Dwayne introducing himself and ends with Hans giving the look of being scared. So we finish things on Friday with the two FBI agents showing up, and they give us that famous quote. You know, I'm Special Agent Johnson. This is Agent Johnson. No relation.
Yes, Johnson and Johnson.
That's right. Johnson and Johnson. And this minute begins with our good friend Dwayne T. Robinson running over to them and continuing to act as silly as he always does, and goes over to them and says, "I'm Dwayne Robinson, LAPD. I'm in charge here." And then Little Johnson looks at him and goes, "Not anymore." Or actually, no, sorry, it's Big Johnson.
Big Johnson. Big Johnson, yeah.
You know, it's Robert Davi.
Robert Davi is Big Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. Big. Sometimes they're very interchangeable, the two Johnsons, with the way that they speak and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't
want to step on anybody's future minute, but my favorite one is when he picks up the walkie-talkie, and I think it's a phone. He said, "Yeah, this is Johnson. No, the other one. Yeah.
Exactly.
Great line. And this is peak Paul Gleason here. He's so good at being stepped on. Dwayne Robinson is just, he's the same character that he was in The Breakfast Club. He does that character of being one-upped so much better. Kind of the Frank Burns character of the show. He's just inept and trying to cover his ineptitude.
Yeah.
But just very enjoyable. It's a really, I would think this is a pretty tough act to follow, to be this inept on screen and keep being topped by some other character on the screen. But that's his job.
He plays a memorable character.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it too. You know, the idea that you can still, you know, your character, I mean, your character might not be that great, but you know, last week we had the whole thing with Harvey Johnson saying about, Helsinki, Sweden.
Yeah.
And then so, you know, there are lines that you get paid and, you know, that's the idea. We want you to be here. You're going to get paid. You know, you can make an ass out of yourself. It doesn't matter because it's the character. It's not you. It's the script.
Yeah.
Blame it
on
the script.
But great placement in all this. The scenes, Robert Davi taking charge, he moves to the front of the screen and he takes up, I mean, he's taking up half the screen by the end of his scene. And he's just, you know, nonchalantly smoking the cigarette and informing that Paul Gleason that the big guns are in charge now. So
that's really funny. I also have written down in my notes, nonchalantly taking a puff of a cigarette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Like he's been through this before. It's, you know, the scenario, the
well, tomorrow we'll get to the scenario.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But he's like, he just rolls this thing off. Like he's seen it 1,000 times and it's just a beautiful scene of how this comes. And even little things, it's like, he comes in, if you look at their ties, Davi's, you know, the both Johnsons have perfectly tied ties. And
Dwayne Robinson is
yeah, he's all open. A little bit, and it's tight. He's been yanking on that tie all evening as things got worse and worse. So,
well, because he keeps hanging himself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. just beautiful, beautiful cinematography, beautiful direction in this.
And, yeah, I mean, I also love the way that Robert Davi delivers his line. I mean, he just says not anymore, but he says it in a very commanding, but also very unsympathetic. He's like, I don't really care.
Yeah. Dismissive. It's like just telling people that, you know, you've got tickets and you're talking to the usher or something. It's just,
exactly.
Get out.
Go park
my car. Yeah. That kind of thing.
So, I'm in charge now.
Yeah. No, just a beautiful scene. I love the backlighting. Everybody's lit from behind there. It just kind of gives you really the scale of how many people are surrounding the Nakatomi Plaza. And
well, you know where they're supposedly, where their staging ground is, right?
It's on top of the parking garage, isn't it? Or maybe I'm wrong on that.
No, it's not on top of the parking garage, but it's in an area that has a whole bunch of dump trucks and, there's all this heavy construction equipment there.
Oh, right. Okay.
They're apparently like building some building across the street or wherever it is. And so all of these lights are, you know, we've get a few times an aerial shot of the area, and you see that they set up all these lights in this staging area. It's like the perfect area to be doing it, but you know, it's all like dirt, and they're, like I said, there's all these construction vehicles around and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's the same place that Reginald Bell Johnson was rolling down the hill.
No, that's a different area. He was on the other side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's been a while since.
No, that's fine. That's
after
fine.
After doing Die Hard Minute for so many weeks, it's like I love the movie, but I haven't watched the movie since I made the Die Hard Minute.
Seriously, you haven't watched the movie in 4 years.
Well, I do watch it. I watch it every Christmas. This is like one of our Christmas.
You've seen it.
Yeah, I watch Die Hard. Watch Die Hard at Christmas. Watch Poseidon Adventure starting at 11:37 on New Year's Eve. Tradition, because the ship gets hit by the wave at exactly midnight. If you started at 11:37, so
and on April 12th you start watching Titanic.
Yeah, yeah, it's difficult getting all these things right, but you know, just tuning in. I do watch a Rich Rocketeer every October 15th, which is coming up as we're recording.
Yeah,
it's already passed as I played it, but. The events of the Rocketeer take place on the weekend of October 14th, 15th, and 16th. So that's.
Do you split up watching the movie for each day?
No, I just kind of roll through on the 15th. I figure past, present, and future.
Right.
And
right. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Since I did do Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for season two, maybe it's worth it to split that up and watch it. You know, 3 days at a time, right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
To be able to see the things that happen, you know, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
We do. My family does watch October Sky every October 4th.
That's a great movie. I love that movie.
Yeah. Well, actually, by the time that we're recording this, I can already announce that beginning February 6th, October Sky Minute will be coming out. We have, as one of the semi-regular hosts on it, director Joe Johnson agreed to be on the show. So we're going to have the Rocketeer Boys.
Wait, he's going to be on it? He's going to be on it as one of the hosts, or is he just going to be a frequent
guest? Like kind of the way we had Billy Campbell. Mm-hmm. We were having Joe Johnston on. I had reached out to him because Hal and I have been wanting to do this for quite some time. And when I reached out to Joe, I had said, you know, could you be on our show and be on for, you know, more than a couple of episodes? And he said, I don't do podcasts anymore, but since it's you and since it's my favorite movie, sure. And
wow.
I called up Hal. I'm like, holy smokes, Joe Johnston's going to be like, you know, not an everyday guest, but he's going to be on so frequently. We can just, you know, and here's another Joe Johnston episode. So I'm very grateful for having somebody, you know, like him. Well, there's nobody like Joe Johnston. But just being able to have him to talk about the favorite movie of his that he's ever made. So wow. That's going to be in February. And
it's actually impressive that he's willing to admit that that's his favorite movie that he has made. You know, it's like the idea that, you know, when people ask you, you know, who's your favorite kid? You know, yeah, things like exactly. That. There's certain things that's like, I love all my kids the same.
Joe Johnston says that, you know, he has, like you were saying before, that everybody has, you know, nobody can say which kid you like the most. But he said that October Sky was his most heartfelt movie. And that's why it's a favorite of his. He enjoys all the movies he makes. And actually, he said he won't take on a movie script that he doesn't enjoy.
Oh, wow.
But October Sky.
There are very few directors that will say that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't get over because he's like, not only did he direct Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Captain America and The Rocketeer and Hidalgo and all these other great films, but he's, you know, he worked with Industrial Light and Magic and he created the Millennium Falcon. That was his design. He invented Yoda. He designed how Chewbacca was going to look. He designed the way that the X-Wings looked, and he redesigned the TIE fighter so they looked more threatening. He's the one that put the laser on the Death Star up on the side instead of along the equator. All these little things that, you know, everything that you love about Star Wars, he had a hand in designing the artwork. And now he's going to be on our show. So I'm very, very pleased about that.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Wait, so when is it? The show's launching in February, you said, right?
Yeah, February. We're going to be on only twice a week. We're just, I can't do the 5-day a week thing anymore, but we're going to do it twice a week starting in February 2023. So join us at OctoberSkyMinute.com.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. But let's get back to the
let's get back to Die Hard a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So at this point, the shot changes, and I love the way that they do the shot because we see like this mist and, you know, fog and like a light coming through it. Like when I was watching it again to, you know, while I was doing my research for this, it reminded me like of E.T. or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's very mysterious looking, and it doesn't seem like a normal building. I mean, it's like what's going on way up here?
Yeah, right. It makes me wonder where all that smoke is and where that fog is coming from.
Yeah, one of the puzzlers in this particular minute is the graffiti that's drawn on the side. It's like halfway finished Merry Christmas on the side of the
correct
on the side of the HVAC.
Yes,
and it's like. Who does that? You know, it's like of all the graffiti you could think of, Merry Christmas just wouldn't be something that you'd normally write. It's like, you know.
But for me, it's even stranger that it just stops in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, it says Merry Chris, I think it says.
Yeah.
I think it.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, maybe there was a guy named Chris who was working on the HVAC and he thought he put his name and everybody thought he was just a happy-go-lucky kind of guy. So.
And then someone else decided to just write Merry next to it.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not even Chris. It's C-H-R-I.
C-H-R-I, yeah.
It doesn't even go further. It's like maybe he got caught while he was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, he's like spray painting and someone caught him. And they're like, what are you doing there? Nothing. You know.
The can empty. But yeah, it's very bizarre.
So it would be great if we saw like a spray paint can on the side.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know, and then we see coming out of this mist, we see that it's actually Hans, because Hans said on Friday that he's going to go check
the detonator wires,
he's
right?
going to check the detonator wires, exactly. And first of all, the way that he's like using the flashlight and looking around and seeing all of these wires, my first question is okay, does he not trust the fact that Heinrich, Marco, and Uli were putting this stuff together before? Like, why does he need to check it?
Yeah, are they like an inept team? Does he have they made a lot of mistakes in the past?
Well, maybe it could be because two of them get killed while they're in the middle of working on it.
Yeah, so it's just kind of he can't. Well, I guess he's now that things have turned against him, he can't trust anything.
Right. So he just wants to double check it, and then like as he's looking around, you see him shining the flashlight up, the wire all crisscrossed all over the place. You know, it actually looks like a crime scene, or even more, when you see in different movies, someone who's a detective or someone who's trying to piece together something, and they have their wall with all the strings attaching all the different pictures.
Yeah, it's well, the other weird part on this, I don't understand why he would put down his pistol and flashlight other than it serves the script, because later on we're going to find out that he's got other things in his pockets. But if he's got a suit jacket and a tiny little flashlight, just stick the flashlight in his pocket and you wouldn't be walking around without the gun. But again, it's serving the
purpose. No, but he doesn't expect anyone to show up.
Yeah.
That's the last thing.
Well, he knows that the cowboy's up there somewhere.
Yeah. He knows he is, but he doesn't expect to run into him.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, from what I understand in reading about the making of Die Hard, this, as we're getting into this week, as we're going to be to getting into this whole scene here as it begins, was because going through the script, they realized that Hans and McClane never meet each other. So you can't have the two, the good guy and the bad guy in the same, in the same scene together. So this was kind of an add-on scene that was dropped in.
It's an add-on scene that was dropped in, but it was apparently one of the first scenes that they actually filmed.
Yeah. Yeah. But it kind of, they had to shoehorn a way to get them together. So it was, and it, of course there's nobody else in it. So you could shoot it without having to worry about a lot. There's no special effect here other than stringing wires on the ceiling.
Right. Exactly. Apparently, this goes through almost the entire week, but apparently neither of them rehearsed their lines for this whole meeting between the two of them because they wanted it all to feel very spontaneous.
Yeah.
Similar, I guess, to what Harrison Ford, does when he's trying to break Princess Leia out of the, out of the detention
center. Yeah. Plausible excuses. Yeah, it feels very well. It doesn't feel too improv, but it feels very natural as they're doing. I mean, they had to get to a certain point in the script, so talking. Well, they haven't said a word here yet in this minute, but it feels very organic as they're doing things.
Yeah. Now, did you notice that when he steps up to climb up after he puts the gun and the flashlight on the side, you see that there's like a little sign on the wall, I guess you can say, which is it says do not obstruct door. My question is where is there a door there?
I'm assuming that there's something maybe around the corner, or maybe it's above out of eyeshot.
I don't know. It's a very strange place to put a sign saying do not obstruct door, unless this is something that opens and you can go in. Maybe you can twist it like you see in submarines or something like that.
It's some. I'm assuming that there's lots of fans inside this HVAC equipment. So it's like, but why you'd have to? Are they expecting somebody to come out? It's like don't obstruct the door. It's just maybe it's something that is there something that involving fire or safety? And I don't know what's. Yeah, it's an unusual sign.
Yeah.
Could be from another movie, and they just had a couple of signs laying around at the.
That is possible too.
Yeah.
The idea also is that when he climbs up and stuff like that, he's looking around. He's you know, he's shining a flashlight around, and it actually looks as if he finds wires that look to be cut.
Yeah, yeah.
But then my question is, okay, who cut them? I don't think John would have thought to cut the wires, because John didn't even, later on we're going to find out that, you know, John talks about the man upstairs. It's not as if he's aware of the fact that there are wires up there that he needs to cut.
Yeah, there was no gunplay up in this area.
No.
So, not sure. I mean, maybe it's unfinished. They were going to go back. They were getting more equipment. They had to go back and get the other detonators that he's looking for. That's the wires that are hanging loose. That's where the detonators go, and they had to go get them.
Right, because he plays with it a little bit in order to try to maybe connect it or something like that. That's what it looks like. And then he frowns as he's looking at it. At these, maybe you're right. Maybe it's that because, you know, Marco and Heinrich got shot. So,
yeah,
you know, they didn't finish their work, and nobody thought to send somebody else to go back and fix it.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the problem. And of course, you know, McLean has the missing piece here, as we'll talk about later on in the week.
Yeah. And at this point, he basically turns around and jumps down, and he lands in a really, really funny way. To me, it always looks like he's like a monkey. With the way that he lands, because he lands on his hands and feet.
Yeah, it's one of those badly placed superhero landings, like, you know, in the Marvel universe, just kind of boom on the ground. But they wanted to, I guess they wanted to show again this major plot point of John McClane's barefoot.
Yeah,
and that's also instructing Hans later for how to defeat McClane is to do things that will hurt his feet.
Right. I mean, this movie is great at giving us, you know, little plot points earlier on that you don't notice till later, that they keep reoccurring.
Am I wrong, or is Hans blonder in this than at any other point in the movie?
He just seems to looks that way.
Yeah, I think they backed off his hair. This, like you said, this is an early shot, so I think they slowly went back to a less blonde Hans as they filmed other scenes.
Yeah, he looks that way, but the question is, it could also just be the lighting.
True, true.
Because this is very strange. This is a very strangely lit minute.
Yeah, this whole building, everything in Nakatomi Plaza has odd, you know, like there's lights on that don't need to be on. But you can't film in total darkness. But most of the maintenance areas of any building, you're going to have to turn on lights to get there. It's not going to be as well lit as this. But there's lots of I mean, where they're at, they're up near the roof of the building, so there's lights coming in from the top and things that illuminate the outside of the building. So I guess it's all just ambient light.
One of the things that Hans is walking around with here is a flashlight. So what can you tell us about a flashlight, Jim?
Let's see. Flashlights, there's, at the time when they're shooting this in the 80s, we weren't into LED flashlights. So this was... at the time they were usually non-rechargeable and usually, you know, used DC or AA batteries. When I was a long time ago, I worked for the wonderful company called Radio Shack. And one of my responsibilities at the beginning of every month was to give away flashlights, much like the Gillette company. You can get razors for almost free, but the blades cost money. And we used to give away giant plastic flashlights that took 6D batteries. So it's just give away a free flashlight, and then people would buy $6 worth of
you're talking about the plastic ones that they used to have?
The plastic ones, yeah. The red,
the multicolored, the red ones and the blue ones. I remember this.
And we'd give away coupons, and people thought they were getting such a deal by getting a free flashlight. It's like, no. It's like that first dose of crack. You're just like, you understand all the, you know, it's like you really don't need a flashlight that has 6 batteries in it. The light bulb at the top isn't going to be that much brighter.
Right.
We'd give away so many of those things. I mean, nowadays you can have LED flashlights on a keychain that were, you know, that are 10 times brighter than anything that we sold as a flashlight.
For sure. Do people even use the batteries anymore?
I don't know. I mean, I remember.
I remember, you know, we used to have like
the boomboxes.
The boomboxes and the flashlights and, you know.
Yeah. There was like, you know, old toys might take two AA or two D batteries.
Right. I think nowadays just about everything is AA and AAA. I mean, I don't even think you have 9 volts anymore.
Yeah, no. I mean, 9 volts, I think you'd see in your smoke alarm.
Yeah.
Maybe
I remember you can get shocked from the 9 volts. You know, you're supposed to lick your finger to check it to see if it's still working.
Yeah. Or start a you can start a campfire and things like that by putting steel wool in a 9 volt, and the steel wool will spark and catch tinderwood up.
Oh wow, that I did not know. That I never tried.
An old Radio Shack story was one of the store managers that I worked with in upstate New York. His car wouldn't start, and he was an electrical engineer. He got a whole bunch of 9 volts out of a bin. And he mounted them back to back to back to back and actually jump started his car with a bunch of 9 volt batteries. And I was just, I didn't know you could do that. But yeah, apparently you could plug in enough starting amps to, he had a whole, I mean, he must have used, we had like these bins and he had several handfuls of 9 volt batteries and then jump started his car with all these little, transistor radio batteries.
Wow. So in what year do you think the flashlight was invented or patented?
I would think that there'd been ones like back in the 1890s. I would think that, you know, Sherlock Holmes might have had something, but I don't know like what the storage battery looked like. So, but they had like railroad lanterns and stuff. I would say the turn of the 19th to 20th century.
And you would be correct. It was 1899.
Oh, okay. Wow. They used to use the large 6 volt batteries. Batteries came in, the idea of a battery, or naming a battery was because it was you'd stack a bunch of cells together to make a group, and the guy that put them together said that it was like a battery of cannons. The collective power would make a battery of power. So we're dealing with 120-year-old technology.
Yeah, the first one had a fiber tube with brass ends and bullseye glass lens at one of the ends.
That sounds like quite a potential hand weapon. If you, I know the maglite batteries that a lot of police officers used were also as a defensive tool. They were rather good, like carrying a metal bat around. I was trying to think nowadays what you were saying that we've kind of gotten away from the C and the D cells. The double A's we use in triple A's. I keep thinking of remote controls. So your remote control stops working. Or the one I use the most is I have a wireless keyboard.
Yeah.
And
a wireless mouse and all that stuff.
Wireless mouse, and you start once you start shaking the mouse, and you're like, "What's going on?" And it's like, "Oh yeah, gotta go change the battery."
Exactly.
They go through them fast, but we live in a world now of rechargeable everything. So I don't know if the one time use, I would assume that the one time use battery sales have gone down. Although we have more cordless implements, so maybe it's held steady.
I would say that it's held steady because I think most people are lazy, myself included, that I don't use rechargeable batteries for my mouse. When it dies, I just change the battery.
The idea of having to plug it in, and which is weird because we all started with corded mice, and that didn't really affect us that much. But now everything's
got mice or mouses.
I don't know. I only have one, so I'm just going to go with the mouse.
I actually have two,
I actually have several. I think it's Microsoft. No, it is. It is Microsoft. Yeah. I bought a Microsoft silent mouse because
I have one of those.
While you're recording, it doesn't click.
Mine's Xiaomi, something like that. I have a silent one too.
So
that when you're recording, you don't hear click, 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 click.
Yeah, but when I'm being creative, I have to have the clickety clickety Microsoft mouse. Cause I'm never quite sure if I hit that left button quite right.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
But it's fascinating how much portable power is still much a part of our lives, and how much it's changed since, you know, we were kids and things. You usually thought about, all those cassette tape players that you had that had C batteries in them, or the mini recorders that had the double A's. So you always had to get like a big, and I've noticed, you know, in the world that we live in of Costco's and Walmart's and all the giant chain stores, we used to buy batteries maybe four at a time at most, but now it's like you got to buy a box of 36 or, right, you know, 48. you just have to have a battery of batteries in your house, just because so many things are going to go dead soon, and you're really, what used to be a luxury is now a necessity, and you have to have your mouse powered up all the time.
Completely. I remember that there was a time also that they used to sell that on the package itself, you were able to check the,
yeah,
the yes, how, you know, how much power was left in the, yeah, in the would, battery. You had to like squeeze both ends, and there would be like,
and it would change color, and it would change like green color or red.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they were, I think they still put expiry dates on them. I haven't noticed. We go through batteries so fast. I don't think they have time to expire in our house.
I don't know if they put them on. Do they put them on the battery themselves, or they only have them on the
it's box? On the box, I think, on the box. Although I think Duracell on the 9 volts, I think they used to put them on the battery itself. But I don't think there's enough room on like a AAA to put that.
There's definitely room. It's a question of how big, how small of a font do you want to use.
Exactly. Wow.
Right.
But yeah, this definitely looks like a nice, I mean, it looks like it's definitely not a free Radio Shack flashlight.
No. And it's not a maglite either.
No.
It's somewhere in between.
Yeah. And, it looks pretty good. I don't know how, like from the size of the lens, the Fresnel that's on it, I don't know how much it would light up stuff. It looked like you'd have to be close to get anything, worthwhile, but again, it's a prop, and it's important for the completely. Show.
And then so, you know, we had Hans jump down, landing on his hands and feet, looking at John's bare feet, and then the shot that we get him. I mean, you mentioned before that his hair looks blonder, but also the cut looks different here.
Yeah, that might have been like an insert or something, or
yeah, the
it's
the way that his hair is here. It doesn't look, it looks like much more shaggy than it does
this
beforehand, as he's looking at
this might be gun. This might be the actual start of the, you know, that first scene where they first did, like, this is, he got blonder in this scene. So I think this might've been the earlier shot scene. And the other thing is kind of like a connective tissue to get to this scene.
Right. And he looks up and he sees the barrel of the gun pointed right at his face, and he does a nice job of immediately making it look like he's very scared about what's going on.
Right. Yeah. And things. So, and that very nice setup. This is, you know, for first day of the week, this is a great setup for what's coming for the rest of this week as we watch, you know, this Hans versus McLean. At this point, McLean is evaluating him, so he doesn't know if he's a terrorist or if he's one of the Nakatomi employees.
Right.
And I do like the way that Bruce Willis is playing a complete cipher here. You can't read his face. He's just kind of...
Right. I mean, we'll get more into that later in the week, because now we just get that initial shot of him or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the script, there's... In this particular scene, there's one minor discrepancy. It doesn't go into detail about what Hans is checking. It just says, the mechanical floor tight on Hans. He checks the plastique, not pleased. He turns, drops to the floor. You know, so they as we know, they drag this out to, 40, 50 seconds. That one line there. And then it says he lands, knees bent. Looks directly at a pair of bare feet. A gun barrel drops into the shot close to his head.
And we are now, you know, in any given scene, you have to figure out who the organizing sensibility is. We are Hans in this scene.
Yes.
So it's interesting seeing that we're leaning into the villain's role. It's kind of disconcerting. You're like, well... We're supposed to be rooting for John McClane, but it's but in the in this thing is like, well, how's Hans going to get out of this situation? Yeah. We're actually, we're kind of rooting for Hans, which is always an interesting turn. My favorite turn with these things is the movie Psycho, when we're watching Norman Bates as it's disposing of the evidence of killing off Janet Leigh, and putting her body and everything that she owns inside of the trunk of her car and pushing it into a swamp. And we watch him watch the car sink, and then the car stops, and he leans forward and starts chewing his nails watching the car sink. And we as the audience are actually rooting for Norman Bates, like, oh, I hope the body goes into the swamp and he doesn't get, you know, caught. And it's just a weird feeling, but this is, you know, in a smaller version, yes, this is us rooting for Hans.
Completely. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger type movies. So what have you got for us?
Okay. Well, I'm sure people have done this before, but if you were going to give the elevator pitch for Die Hard, it's Ocean's 11 in Towering Inferno. It's a heist movie. It's a disaster movie. And going back long ago,
First of all, I want to interrupt you with that just for one second. I love that you bring the Ocean's 11 point in, because, you know, Frank Sinatra is the original John McClane. So
that's where this is at. So, and that's what I was thinking of when I thought, you know, Sinatra brought this out, but
yeah,
you're dealing with a heist movie. The only thing we missed here is assembling the team. That you always have the, you know, US will be, I'm, you know, you've got me, I'm in this, I'm gonna join, you know, and you've got all the, you know, the computer guy, the acrobat, the muscle, all those, you know, going out and getting the team together and getting ready to go out and start the job.
Right.
So these are all supposed to be European heist specialists. These are all they're second story men, and they've done all this before. The two movies that I keep thinking about, in any heist movie, you've got assembling the team, and then you have the ruse, which is what will distract the police while you're actually doing the heist. So in the case of Die Hard, you're pretending it's a terrorist attack when actually all you're doing is trying to get into get the bearer bonds and all that stuff, that, you know, the MacGuffin there. European criminal specialists that, you know, that are good at burglarizing things. I think of the 1964 movie Top Cappy, which starred,
great movie.
Yeah, Peter Ustinov. And it's based in it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, I strongly recommend watching it. It's funny, and it has clever twists in it, but it has all those elements of what's happening is there is the Topkapi Museum, which is in Istanbul, Turkey. They have a traveling display of rare antiquities, like emerald encrusted daggers and all kinds of stuff. And what the team decides they're going to do is they're going to break into the Topkapi Museum and swap out the replicas that are in the traveling museum exhibit with the real treasures that are in the museum. And it goes, I don't want to spoil the twists and turns, but it has a lot of those, the things that you're always used to that, you know, don't make a sound. It doesn't have the avoiding the lasers by, you know, crawling along the floor.
That was 1964, what do you expect?
yeah, but it's, you know, they have different alarm systems that they have to overcome, and swapping things out, and there's always some little thing that gives them away that to get caught for stuff. That's one of the movies that I think of when I think of a classic heist with European thieves. The other thing is always the simple twist that there's something that the ruse is actually part of the heist. And one of my favorite movies is Blake Edwards did a movie called After the Fox. And it starred Peter Sellers as the fox. He was this guy that had planned all these heists. And he stole gold from the Egyptian treasury. But he had to get the gold out of Egypt, across the Mediterranean, and then into Europe through Italy. And so what he does is he sets himself up as an Italian director, and his Federico Fabrizi so he's supposed to be like Fellini, and he's making an art film called The Gold of Cairo. And he has the ship that's bringing the gold from Cairo is going to stop at this little fishing village in Italy, and he convinces the mayor and the town police chief that they're all going to be in a movie, and they're going to bring gold that's been needed by this town to make it rich, and or they're going to bring in prop gold. So he convinces the entire town to help unload hundreds of tons of gold bars out of this ship, and he hires an aging film star to make it look legitimate. And the film star is played by Victor Mature, who does a great job as an aging film star. But Blake Edwards, typical comedy, similar in line with the Pink Panther and things like that. And it's just lots of misadventures and stuff. But it's hard. It's a heist movie. It's a comedy, which you can say Die Hard is a comedy. It has many comedic elements to it. So I would say, so for the two heist movies, I would talk about Top Cappy and After the Fox, available probably on Amazon or wherever. I'd say go with those. The other part of this of Die Hard is it is a type of disaster film, in the style of Towering Inferno. Mm-hmm. But as you know, I've done a previous movie that I've done was Airport, which is one of the original disaster movies that had an all-star cast and things like that. Airport is there's two types of disaster movies. There's an internal salvation disaster movie, things like the Poseidon Adventure, where there's a huddled group of survivors that has to get themselves out. They have no help from the outside world, so they have to fight their way out of a bad situation and get out of this disaster that they're trapped in. Then there's ones of which Die Hard is a part. You have an internal-external disaster movie. So you have an internal struggle. In this case, you've got John McClane with external help, which is Reginald Vell Johnson and the FBI and all those people. Example of that, the movie that I had done, my first Movies by Minute movie, Airport, features that. You have a crippled 707 that is traveling. Half the people on it are injured, and they have to make it back to an airport covered in snow that has a disabled runway that they have to get an airplane off. So Airport would be an internal-external disaster film. Another one like it was its sequel, Airport 75, where there's a 747 that gets hit by a twin-engine plane, and the crew is dead, and they have to teach the stewardess how to fly a 747 to land it safely with hundreds of people on board. So I would say my top five in doppelgangers. So those heist movies, Top Cappy, After the Fox, and then in disaster movies, I would say Poseidon Adventure as an internal disaster, and then external assist, which would be Airport and its sequel, Airport 75. And maybe a nota bene for Towering Inferno. Towering Inferno is an inside-outside help. You've got Paul Newman on the inside and Steve McQueen on the outside trying to save all these people in a burning skyscraper.
Yeah.
All worthwhile films.
All right. Great. Excellent. So you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Well, you can find, as I said before, the new one comes out in February, which will be October Sky Minute. Which is available at octoberskyminute.com in February. Also in February, our latest group Movies by Minutes project covers the 1999 Frank Oz-directed feature Bowfinger, starred Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy. This is a kind of like a Whitman sampler of Movies by Minutes hosts. We've got 19 different hosts coming on to do things. Each gets a week of the show. Very funny comedy, again, directed by Yoda himself. So it's and it's a movie about making movies. A very funny comedy, but that's going to premiere the last day of February in 2023.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, and you can go directly to my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, Jim, you feel like coming back tomorrow and trying to find out who this scared person might be?
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
All right. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.